or a customer services representative.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Premier Foods Q3 Interim Management Statement. My name is Faye, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you'll be on listen only. However, at the end, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you will be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to your host, Gavin Darby, to begin. Thank you.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Gavin Darby here, Premier Foods CEO. I'm joined by Alistair Murray, our CFO. I'm sure you have had access to our IMS. We're talking about our interim management statement for the third quarter to the 30th of September 2014. Now, clearly, it's a very busy day with a lot of different companies reporting, so we'll try and reflect that by getting through my introduction as fast as possible. The headlines really are that clearly the environment, the conditions, the market conditions that we are operating in are very demanding, and many of you are tracking closely the reporting from some of our major customers, including Tesco today. So we've had a branded sales reduction of 4.1% in quarter three. Now, while that is 4.1%, that compares with -6.8% in the second quarter, and as we say in the body of our IMS, we see a recovery or a better trend, I suspect, as you get towards the end of the quarter than we had back in the kind of early mid-summer. Now, while the environment is very challenging, management ultimately is paid to course correct, adapt, and take advantage of changes, and that's really what we've been doing. Within our overall strategy, we have made major changes to our organization during the third quarter by splitting it into three different business units, very much on the continued trend of taking complexity out of the business, something that I've talked about and we've been driving for the last 18 months. So that allows three different business units to move in a more agile and adaptable way, with even more focus and accountability. I mean, in terms of our trading profits, we've announced that we still guide within what is the range as the range of different expectations based on the analysts who track the company, but towards the lower end of our expectations. And in the meantime, we have continued to, in fact, disproportionately started to invest in our brands. So we have, as we discussed at the half year, held back, frankly, most or a large proportion of our marketing money to the fourth quarter. Why do we do that? The fourth quarter, as many of you know, is the most important, far the most important quarter for Premier Foods. And so we've been investing strong from September onwards on Kipling, Home Pride, and now Bisto and OXO. And we're encouraged by the early results of the first two brands that we've been supporting, in particular, which are Mr. Kipling, our biggest brand, and Home Pride. We can talk about that later. So we've got our foot very much to the floor in terms of marketing investment and investment in new brands, which we're taking to the market. So with that as an introduction, I'll turn the floor over to your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star one again. You will be advised when to ask your question. And our first question is from the line of Karine Elias from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my questions. Just going back to the challenging environment that you're seeing, I was wondering whether you could comment on any particular performance across categories. So are you seeing any structural decline? I mean, I remember the last quarter we had a decline in soups, for instance. Has that normalized, in your opinion, and would you attribute the overall decline in sales to what we're seeing, I think, across the board on the industry? That's my first question. And then secondly, with regards to your margins, obviously, you talked about investment in marketing, but in terms of your plans to reduce the proportion of private label, is that continuing on plan, and should we see the mix overall improving on the back of that? Thank you.
Yes, in terms of the first question, I think the primary factor is the change. I think it's been without doubt an accelerated change in shopping patterns as we've moved through the second quarter into the third quarter. And that is manifested in consumers, shoppers shopping less in big hypermarkets and big supermarkets we know, and more in many other different formats. So it's a kind of fragmentation into convenience and online and branded discounters and hard discounters. So that is the biggest phenomena I think that we're referring to. I think the key thing to understand the impact of that, and that is a volume impact, and some of you have heard me say that before. I'd like to restate that. I see that predominantly as consumers, shoppers change behavior and move into different formats and channels, it moves volume, and that's really the major factor. I don't see that so much, and I've said this before, as a value issue. A value issue, that would be a completely different order of magnitude. I see it as a volume issue, and that's one of the reasons why we, I think, referred in our IMS in the body to the fact that our gross margins remain solid. In terms of brand mix, you're right, we continue to focus on our brands. You'll see we continue to pull away from less profitable, either non-branded, retailer-branded, or even B2B business. And you can see that in these numbers. Our non-branded business was down 10% in revenue in the quarter. And as you implied by the second part of your question, as our mix moves strongly towards brands, we're up above 90% of our revenue now in brands, then as our branded gross margins are higher, then that has a reinforcing impact in terms of the company's overall gross margin percentage.
Okay, that's very helpful. And then just lastly, on the relaunch of Mr. Kipling, any color that you could provide, is that, you know, along in line with your expectations? Are you seeing any particular pickup? And also, if you could comment on your product development, so any number that you could talk about for the fourth quarter, but also for fiscal 15? Thank you.
Well, Mr. Kipling is our biggest brand, so it's the biggest thing we could do to move volume and revenue in a good direction, and we relaunched it right towards the latter month, so it was mostly in September, the third of month of the quarter we're referring to. So and we see good volume, revenue, and share trends, but you know it's early days. It's the first 4 weeks in the reported period. So we're encouraged by that. And the same is true, frankly, of Home Pride cooking sauces, which have been refreshed, relaunched, repackaged with new varieties and flavors. We see that. So we are encouraged, as I referred to briefly, by the fact that disproportionately encouraged by the strategy, which we refinanced the business on back in the first quarter of the year, which is based on refreshing and reinvesting and reinvigorating our brands. You know, those two are really good examples of important brands that we put money behind and start moving in a good direction. In terms of NPD, we're launching under both Bisto and OXO, as you know and you see, and you can see on TV a number of new initiatives. So they tend to come in more in the fourth quarter. So the NPD hits the fourth quarter, and we'll continue on that in that direction as we expand our innovation pipeline and our NPD launches, which will obviously roll into 2015.
Great. And just lastly, obviously, the fiscal call is ongoing. There's been a lot of chatter with regards to price wars and promotional levels. I think overall, what we have seen so far was more price cuts on the produce, so items where the price transparency is actually higher. Are you seeing any particular changes on the trends? Anything that you can comment on in particular over the past months?
I mean, we've seen it's a good question. Your last one, I know there are more than 80 people on the call, so this is a question which I know other people are interested in the answer to though as well, so thank you for it. The majority of the, you know, I focus very much in my answer to your third question on volume. The big impact of the change of shopping behavior is on volume, not on price and value, and that remains the case. The two points I would make in addition to that are the majority of the big price differences and pricing action is in fresh vegetables, fruit, staples like milk, and to some degree in own label. So, and the final point is that branded products tend, A, they're branded and have some degree of insulation and franchise with the consumer, but B, they are intensely promoted and always have been very intensely promoted. So, you know, I think, you know, that's the status in this era at this point. I think we should move, if we may, to the next question, or the next questioner. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Martin DeVoe from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Morning, everybody. I guess I'm just thinking about sort of areas of marginal growth in what's clearly a very difficult environment. And, you know, sort of apart from the brand relaunches, I guess next on the list is your international strategy. You talk a bit about it in the announcement, but I'm just sort of intrigued by how confident are you that it will actually deliver marginal profit as opposed to marginal revenue? I mean, I think you've indicated your international sales are sort of somewhere around 5% of sales. They're about 40 million. You know, that's a number I could believe could double. But are you confident that you can, you know, manage down your cost of entry and distribution in those markets such that actually delivers marginal profit as opposed to marginal revenue?
I believe so. I do, Martin. I mean, we're focusing mostly early on in three places: our cook and sauce business, Sharwood's in the US, and today we actually export. So we're looking, and we deliver the revenue that's part of our 4-5% in the US based on products we ship from the UK. But you know, we're looking at contract packing and the like, which is a way of improving our gross margins and making, you know, creating more resources in the US to invest behind the brand. I think in Australasia, where we do ship from the UK, we've been able to recover, we've been able to price the brands Kipling and Cadbury at the price that, you know, is covering the extra costs of getting the product there. And the same is true with our toe in the water with Ambrosia in China. So I, like you, believe that the business can be, you know, significantly bigger, and I think that the early signs are that, you know, we can recover the right kind of margins from that business as well. But it's early days, you know, and the reason you don't hear me or us over emphasizing international is, you know, international tends to be something you have to build step by step. You know, a good example is, you know, we had until the early part of this year no employees in Ireland. You know, Premier withdrew all of its resources from Ireland. You know, we've hired four people in the second quarter of the year, and so we're building a much stronger fourth quarter Christmas plan in Ireland, which is part of international, but from from scratch. That's the kind of investment we make.
Okay, it's helpful. Thanks for that.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Natalie Mortimer from The Drum. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to ask about the marketing spend. Are you able to say how much you're investing and sort of the way that it will be split between digital or if it will go across TV or print?
I think in the past we've talked that we plan to spend around about £30 million during this financial year. This, the big difference is we've held back, as I implied earlier, a significant proportion of that to the fourth quarter. And so that's why we have commented that we'll spend double the marketing money in quarter four, 14 versus 13. So hopefully that answers the first part of your question. In terms of digital, well, I think if you look at the way we presented, relaunched Kipling in September and now Home Pride, you'll see probably for the first time at Premier very significant report, you know, a very significant step up in terms of digital and social marketing. It's still the minority, I may say, of the total budget because despite all the noise about digital marketing, you can still move the needle disproportionately with mainstream marketing. We've launched, I think, the relaunches of both of Home Pride and of Ms. Kipling have been kicked off with ads in the X Factor, as you may have noticed, because you still move the needle, even in the modern digital age, the most with big mainstream media. But digital is now a big, important part of the mix, and we're leveraging it hard.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Teresa Fox from Stone Harbour. Please go ahead.
Thank you. You had... Hello. You had mentioned that your power brands were improving as you go into the towards the end of this third quarter. I was wondering if you could provide a little more color on that. Thank you.
Yes, so our total branded business was down 4.1 in the quarter against 6.8 down in the prior quarter, and the trend moved in a better direction as we moved into the back end of the third quarter. As we said in our IMS, and September obviously a more important month than July in a kind of more winter centric business. So the main reasons for that were the reasons I really touched on. You know, our marketing for Kipling started hard in September, and Kipling's our biggest brand. But we were also, you may have noted in the announcement that our support brands had, relative to history over maybe the last 3, 4, 5 years, probably their best quarter. We actually had 6 out of our 8 support brands in growth in the quarter. And that's for two reasons. That helped the total branded sales. That's for two reasons. One is the Home Pride relaunch. We were beginning to sell in against that. And secondly, as we've discussed before, we are using some of our kind of secondary brands, the Birds and the Angel Delights and the Paxos. We're accelerating our sales in the discounted channels, both the branded discounted channels. So we're seeing growth in one or two of our second-tier brands that we haven't had before. So that would be the kind of things that are behind an improving trend towards the end of the third quarter.
I guess I was looking for clarity on whether it's still negative or you've seen a turnaround.
I mean, that
is it less
more
negative?
Detail than we're prepared to comment on at the moment.
All right. And could you give me your liquidity position as of the end of the third quarter?
We haven't given any further balance sheet information at the end of Q3, but I think the general point, as you know, is that we refinanced at the start of the year. We are, in a completely different position from a balance sheet point of view, particularly with the new equity that came in, and we have an enormous amount of headroom against covenants. Net debt, we will be publishing a figure at the end of December, which, although it's now not a financial year end, we will be putting that in the public domain soon after the end of the calendar year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Vicky Gage from PIMCO. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. So the first one is, that was helpful color on the support brands. Can you give us a similar breakdown on the power brands? How many were in growth? I mean, if the Mr. Kipling launch was one of the main drivers, kind of how did the other brands perform? There was a lot of promotion activity from one of your competitors. And second question is on the profit range. I just want to confirm what you see as the range, and when you say towards the lower end of expectations, can you just provide a little bit more color on that, please? Thank you.
And on the first question, as a quarterly IMS, we don't actually reveal any more than I have. But I think the second question, which is something I know I'm sure a lot of people on the call are particularly interested in, I believe the range at the minute is between, in terms of trading profit, 129 through to 143. And so when we're talking about the lower end of the range, I mean, that is up,
yep.
I think that's pretty self-explanatory. That's for your guidance and interpretation. But the range is 129 to 143.
That's helpful. Thank you. And just a quick clarification on that, sort of what's changed since the half year. Given the timing of your marketing spend and promotion, that all the product launch sort of started in September, I mean, why have you seen such a big change during Q3 that you're now guiding to the lower end of that rather than sort of the middle of the range?
I think that it comes back to the volume shift from the major supermarket, particularly the larger supermarket channel, which is where the majority of big branded food companies have lined up and configured to serve over time. And as the volume kind of fragments into several different directions, like, as I said, online, smaller stores, convenience stores within the major multiples, hard discounters, branded discounters, then that volume shift is important, and it takes a while to reconfigure the business to pick it up in other places. So that's the major reason.
Just one very quick follow-up. I think you commented in the release that promotions were stable. So can we assume that the sales performance is all volumes?
I think the issues that we're facing, as Gavin's already mentioned, are essentially volume challenges that we've got. Promotions are essentially stable. What we have continued to do is something that we talked about at the half-year point, which was look really closely at where we are spending money on promotions, and particularly look for what tend to be the very deep cut promotions, which actually don't make us any money and also don't help the retailers. And we've been trying to stop doing those. Those can push volume up, but they don't always drive sales, and they certainly don't always drive profits. And we've been pulling away from that kind of activity.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Alex Stone from SG. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions. Just firstly, on the power brands, do the structural challenges that you talk about in the UK retail market make you rethink the kind of medium-term 2-3% growth ambition for these power brands that you announced earlier this year, or is it still a realistic target over the next couple of years? And now, on a related point, I appreciate you don't want to go into the detail of each brand, but you do talk about good performance from Mr. Kipling in the quarter. So presumably to get to the down 5% for the overall power brands, there are some that are particularly underperforming. So just thinking about the seven, is that still the right number, or should you be focusing your marketing resources behind an even fewer number of key brands, which might lead to better results? And then just finally, if you can clarify, what your expectations are for free cash flow for this year, given the guidance change. Thanks.
Well, I think the best way of thinking about our portfolio of brands actually is to talk about our total branded performance, because that really reflects the strategy. We're using all of our brands to, and sometimes our what we would have called our support and secondary brands to drive the categories we're in. So I'm kind of with you and the good example is that we are investing in HomePride, which is not a power brand. Now, in every quarter, you can't invest behind all of your brands, but we've invested behind several in this quarter. And power brands are an important way of thinking about our brands, but there are also other brands in the portfolio which we're going to invest in. As I said earlier, Alex, we're not at the point of talking about any more detail in terms of individual brands. I will say that the Kipling reference I made was to one brand in one quarter of obviously a three month quarter. But in terms of free cash flow,
well, I think what we're saying is that we haven't given any new guidance here on cash flow, other than what we're effectively saying under the financial position is that to the extent that if analysts are moving their profit numbers, then it would seem to me logical that they might make a corresponding adjustment in forecast net debt. But apart from that, there's no other new information that's in here that's relevant to that.
Okay, so thanks. So just on the 2-3% ambition.
On the 2-3% ambition, I think that clearly our strategy remains the same. We will invest in in our brands, and we believe that we can grow in the medium term. I think what we're being is perhaps prudent, and you, many people would say realistic, to say that in the somewhat tumultuous and seismic environment which we're working in, you know, we will get there, but we're not guiding as to exactly when we'll get there. But we see this business as growing, but we think it would be foolish. That's why we came off our 2-3% guidance at the half year, and we've not restated it at this point until we, you know, get through the big kind of turbulence and disruption that the marketplace is reflecting at the moment. But to reinforce, we believe in growing these brands, and that's why we're investing behind four of them hard, and that's why we're doubling the amount of marketing in the second, you know, in the final quarter.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Juan Carrion from Seaport. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just had a kind of a follow-up question in terms of the free cash flow question, but longer term. Previously, you had guided in terms of for next fiscal year in 15 that basically we should see the free cash flow benefit from lower CapEx and lower pension funding. Is that still the general case?
Yep, that's completely unchanged.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Charlie Mills from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah, morning. I appreciate this is a sales call, but since you've mentioned it in the statement, you refer to gross margins remain solid, and you've also said average realized pricing remains stable, which slightly suggests that the relationship with the retailers hasn't particularly changed. I wonder if you could expand on those points. As I said, I appreciate it. It's a sales call, but I'm sure that's something that concerns most investors. So any color you can give on that would be appreciated. Thanks.
Well, I think you heard me say, Charlie, that volume is really the way to think about the primary impact of these big changes. So I stated that very strongly, and I felt that at the half year, and I feel that you know, one quarter later, that would be my first thought. I think the second point, you heard me say that the big promotional, the big action in retailer pricing competition we've seen in the last 5 months has mostly not been in the, it's mostly been in fresh, in other categories like fresh and staple products like milk and to some degree own label, and that brands have a huge degree of intensity of promotional investment, you know, baked in the existing kind of margin structure of the company. And then you overlay the mix moving in a good direction, the direction of our strategy towards brands and away from B2B and unprofitable own label. And you then finally layer in, you know, a relatively benign environment in terms of you know, world input costs, you know, that's more benign than probably would have been true a year or two ago. So you kind of perm those four different points together, and that's why we're happy to say that gross margins feel solid, and at the same time, the intensity of trading relationships, which is always has been very, very high with our big customers, you know, that remains, but it's part of the fundamental kind of margin infrastructure of the company.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Ronan Clark from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi there. I just wanted to ask about the sort of the implications of the channel shift into more convenience within the supermarkets and how that affects you. So how do your brands play into that scenario? Are you over-indexed or under-indexed in convenience versus the supermarket or hypermarket formats?
Yeah, I understand the question. Well, we're over-indexed. So as volume moves over time into direct, like online and to smaller stores or convenience stores within, you know, the fascia or convenience formats within the major multiples, that is a positive trend. So those moves are good for Premier Foods because brands do disproportionately well in those two sectors or two formats, and we over-index therefore.
Okay. Is it positive across your portfolio, or is there some be some winners, some losers, maybe?
It is more. It is definitely more positive than negative. I mean, most of I could think of maybe one category that the category under it indexes in smaller stores. But by and large, I mean, if you go into the convenience formats of the major multiples, you will see a disproportionately wide range of premier products, including some of our support brands that would not be brands that we would tend to focus on and talk about at this kind of level. So, no, it's a positive trend.
Mm. Even without the sort of the extra promotional push, I guess there's less promotional activity right in that channel.
There is, but there's a different kind of investment. I mean, we are investing a good example. You have to invest more in packaging and case formats to best serve that channel. And if you look at marketing, you will see that we invest marketing in the direct, on the direct shopping portals of our big customers. So there are marketing costs that go with it. But no, it's a positive. It requires some adaptation and flexibility of the supply chain, but it is a positive trend.
Okay. Super, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further questions coming through.
Very good. Well, I know it's a very busy day. Thank you for your time, and have a good one.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now replace your handset.
Please hold the line for the conference host to join the conference or a customer services representative. The line for the conference host to join the conference or a customer services representative.